Hi, this is Andrew Middleton and welcome to the Learning, Teaching and Assessment in Higher Education podcast from Sheffield Hallam University in the UK. Social networking applications such as MySpace and Facebook are providing really interesting opportunities for education. In this episode, I continue a conversation I started a couple of episodes ago with Vic Whittaker from Sheffield Hallam University. In the earlier episode, we discussed Web 2.0 tools and to-do lists in particular. In this conversation, we discussed Vic's experience of online communication and his recent use of Facebook. We discussed some ethical issues, such as how applications like Facebook can blur the lines between private, public, and professional lives. Why did you sign up to Facebook?
I'm a member of a little group in Sheffield that's nothing to do with the university or education per se, called Mosaic. And they have their kind of conversations and social functions facilitated by Facebook. So being a member of it, knowing the others were on it, I thought, okay, I'll sign up for Facebook and see what it's all about. And it's been really fascinating because Facebook kind of hooks you up with different communities almost intuitively. It's not even necessarily a conscious decision. And as a networking system, it's awesome because what I found was that in Mosaic in Sheffield, there are probably no more than 20 people as a social group. But Facebook has this kind of friend relationship. So if I have 20 friends in Mosaic, what I find is that their friends become my friends. And my friends become their friends. And the networking explodes.
That is one of the bizarre things that I discovered, and I haven't personally experienced it because I haven't spent much time in there, but I thought these social networking tools were about consolidating a friendship network, and it does work like
it
that.
It does, yeah.
But if you have a friend, basically that you friend becomes a friend of your friend.
That's right, and you have access to all of these individual relational networks. You don't have to kind of take them up, of course. You have the option on whether you do or you don't. But what you have is access, which is amazing. For instance, on Facebook, through a group that's based in Sheffield, I now have conversations with somebody in San Francisco, somebody in Johannesburg, and somebody in Hong Kong. And they weren't my connections. And in fact, this last week, I met a young student from Sheffield University who has joined the community here in Mosaic community in Sheffield because of a recommendation from her friend in Johannesburg. She came to Sheffield to do a degree here, and she was having difficulty finding her way into a social network that she was comfortable with. She'd tried a couple and it wasn't working. And she has a friend back in South Africa who happened to have kind of hit onto the Mosaic network through Facebook. And he just sent her an email saying, I know there's a group called Mosaic. This is their website. Check them out. And she's now joined us physically through a virtual connection.
Right, because whenever I've had conversations with people who aren't members of Facebook and maybe have vaguely heard about it, one of the reservations is, oh, here's another thing that's going to keep me or my son or my daughter sitting at the computer for another hour every day.
That's a valid statement.
Okay, well, let's come on to that in a second. Yeah. But actually, what we've just identified is that description of sitting at the computer for another hour a day or whatever it is sounds as though it's alienating you from real people. But you've just described a situation where you've extended your real life friendship network.
Absolutely.
So the tool is actually impacting on the people you speak to and
physically
sit with in real life.
Yeah, and there's another link in that the chap from San Francisco works for a company called Intel, and he's coming over to London later this year to do some work with Intel. And because of the virtual relationship, he's going to come to Sheffield to kind of meet with the social network, the physical network. So that's another way that the virtual connection is making a physical real connection.
Both you and I know, have been involved in learning situations where we are learning with people who are not in Sheffield.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I took away from that, where people were located in other European countries, was the intensity of a relationship you can actually have in a computer-mediated environment.
I agree. One of the things that I try to highlight to my students who are learning about ICT facilitation is that there is a side to our social natures which can be enhanced in the written form. I use an example in that I effectively wooed my wife by letter from long distance. We were separated for much of our kind of engagement period and pre-engagement period. And it was by letter that we developed our relationship and ultimately got married. And one of the things I found, and I'm sure others find, is that sometimes it's a lot easier to reveal deep issues and deep beliefs and feelings in a written form where you have some distance between you and the person than actually eyeball to eyeball. Sometimes you can tend to remain at a superficial distance when you're actually physically co-located. Whereas given a text remote system, as the old-fashioned letter, which is now replaced by email, you can actually go a little deeper. And I think I've seen that happen in a number of colleagues, where the relationship has been able to be deepened and extended by the fact that there is this remote distance between us, and you can get a greater intensity of delivery.
I find exactly that in the situation that I'm thinking of, where in real life, you know, you might be so excited and generating so many ideas as a learning group. But actually that can be quite dangerous, because the ideas come thick and fast and misunderstandings can come out at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So by working in that text environment, you can actually have those ideas and generate the enthusiasm, but you can also substantiate them and check them and ensure that your meaning is more clear.
I agree.
And I found that I was doing that, and the people in the learning group that I was working with were doing the same sort of thing. So we were generating a lot of energy between us, but substantiating it there and then, even putting references to our ideas.
Yeah, and I think in that kind of brainstorming environment, there is a danger that ideas are lost, they're dissipated, because there's so much happening. And when it's text-based, there's less possibility of those things being lost, because, in essence, they're recorded.
Yeah.
They're archived. You can go back and look at them again. Whereas when they are kind of snatched words in the ether, it's easier for them to be lost. And perhaps something that was only briefly mentioned in that kind of brainstorming environment might have been the key idea, but you lost it because other things became the focus.
Yeah. So I think that there's a bearing, obviously, having raised that, with some of these social networking environments like Facebook. Okay, the time, this criticism that, it's just another application,
it
like
is.
Computer games, like online videos, whatever you want. It's another one of these applications that's going to keep stuck well in front of the computer.
Absolutely, and I have to confess that when the Mosaic Group kind of told me that they were enabled by Facebook, so here was an opportunity to become a member, there was an inward groan, because I already have a lot of kind of Blackboard related work that I do. I keep an eye on all my students and their discussion fora, and there's all the work that goes on with that. So for me it was, oh god, yes, not another electronic environment that I'm going to have to keep monitoring and keep up to date with.
Do you have to in that group?
You don't have to. It supports it, and what I found is that it was worth going in there, because it's not high maintenance, because you get email feeds to you when people put information on. What I tend to find is that at the end of any day, I might have two or three notes from somebody who's put some information on Facebook. and I can choose to look at it or not look at it. It's quite easy to prioritise. And often, I mean, I've had an ideal example for you. I had one invitation to be a friend on Facebook, and it was from a student here at Hallam. And at the time, I thought, you know, do I want to respond to this invitation or not? And I left it until there was a convenient time to do so. Went on, saw who it was, thought, okay, you know, I'll accept the invitation. And that, of course, gives me access to that student's sort of homepage with their profile and everything, and to her friends and the discussions that are going on there. And I spent probably no more than 5 minutes browsing it, saw the content of her pages and thought, this is not for me. This student is not somebody who would be within my social group. Some of the things that were being expressed I found unpleasant. So I just withdrew. I ceased to be her friend.
Right. This is a really interesting area. I mean, there's several things around this, but most of them are based on the fact that the system itself, as we've discussed, automatically connects you or offers to connect you to various networks. And secondly, it's very easy to invite other people, even if the system isn't doing it automatically, into your network. And I wonder if, as educators, we have some kind of responsibility to teach or work with our students in respect to being careful about who you talk to or who you share information with.
Absolutely.
I mean, it doesn't you have an online presence in these environments, and it's not particularly modified for one group of people over another. So I've been invited by students, and quite frankly, some of the photographs of some of the female students are very... Well, they're obviously primarily thinking about...
relationships.
Relationships other than educational relationships. Yeah. So it's kind of bizarre, and it's odd. My reaction has been, oh, it's odd that they invited me to see them in this way.
Yeah.
So I don't know, I'm slightly confused by it, really. But
it is interesting, isn't it? Because this particular invitation gave me a totally different view of the student to any that I'd seen professionally. If you'd asked me about her beforehand, I'd have said she's a top student, you know, really dedicated, committed to her work, produces good work, you know, she's going to get a good degree. I would have given nothing but plaudits. And then seeing the other side of her, I was absolutely shocked.
So do you think it's affected your professional opinion of her?
I think there is a dilemma there for me.
Yeah.
That now I must somehow forget what I've learned. I think having had access to her profile.
Her private life.
Yeah, absolutely. I now have to lay that aside. I've withdrawn from the relationship, and I have to lay it aside and say, I've got to treat her as though I didn't know any of that at all, because it would colour my judgment of her as a person, and that wouldn't be right, I don't think. But there's the dilemma, isn't it? We're given a different form of access to people within a different environment. I see Facebook is very different from Blackboard. Blackboard is a very professional focused environment. There's no anonymity there, or at least I don't permit anonymity, because I think it's good that we know who we're talking to, and it's focused on the profession and on the learning. You go into a social network like Facebook, and you are seeing a very different presentation of people and their persona. How real that presentation is another issue.
Do you think, I'm not suggesting this for anyone's second, you know, at all in terms of, you know, what you and I have just suggested, but I can imagine that some lecturers may get the wrong message if they've been invited, their students has positively invited them to come and witness this particular private profile, and it is a wee bit flirty, shall we say, then I can imagine that creating some real difficulties for some people. So, you know, maybe
I agree.
We need to educate our staff about such things as well.
I think that's a very good point, and having, in a sense, had my fingers a little burnt by this one, I think I would be very, very cautious about now accepting an invitation from another student onto Facebook. I think it could have a damaging effect on the professional relationship between student and teacher.
Interesting. The other thing that aligned to that is less sinister, but it's the readiness in which people can and do offer friendship and what we mean by friendship. That confuses me as well, because I suppose in real life I'm not the sort of person that will walk up to someone and say, will you be my friend?
Absolutely. That's an interesting thing, isn't it?
But online,
an invitation to be a friend.
What does that mean?
Yeah, you get an email that says, Jess wants to be your friend.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
But why?
Yeah, who is she and why does she want to be my friend? It is. And it's creating a whole new kind of social culture, isn't it?
Mm.
And very much a text-enabled culture. Although, of course, with these W2 applications, what you get is not just text. People put galleries of photographs up there as well. So you've got another element to it, which I found quite interesting with the main group that I'm in, Mosaic, because there are some very creative people within this group. And what I'm seeing is some of their creativity being displayed. So as we were talking earlier about, the possibility of e-portfolios, in essence, that's what I'm seeing from some of these people. They are displaying an artist's portfolio to me, which perhaps I wouldn't have such easy access to.
Is it an artist community?
It's quite a creative community with some
other context. With a lot of the Web 2.0 applications, I'm thinking, how can we use them in education? But I'm also thinking, well, yes, I can see some educational applications, but as educators, what we're actually witnessing is a world that's changing.
Yes.
And that a world that generally we ought to be acknowledging, and acknowledging in terms of what it says about our students and the world that they will be operating in.
And to some extent preparing them for that world.
Exactly.
We should be up there at the cutting edge so that we see these things developing.
Yeah,
and I think, as you pointed out earlier, we need to be alerting our colleagues and our students to the fact that these things exist, maybe helping them to sample them, but with the cautions that go with it that say, if you're going to go on this environment, be aware that the profile, the details that you give about yourself, perhaps your address, your telephone number, that sort of thing, could have consequences. So, who's going to have access to those things? Are you willing for people to have free access to these things? So there is a sense of kind of social responsibility that goes with it.
Do you think that we as educators have that responsibility? Or do you think that we should be looking to our students to educate us? After all, they are more likely to have been using these tools, be more experienced with them, be maybe not as naive as we might fear.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say, should we be looking to them to educate us? I think whether we do or we don't, they are educating us.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good point that we need to be aware of, perhaps more conscious of, is I'm learning so much from these kind of virtual environments, which is beyond the scope, particularly thinking of things like Facebook, the social environments, of what I was doing within Blackboard. My kind of Blackboard focus was very much an academic one, with a little bit of social enabling. And I have to say that works well for my groups. I don't know how other groups do on Blackboard, but I noticed recently that one of my full-time groups, the number of contributions to the social discussion area was in excess of 200, with a group of 23, 24 people over a period of 12 weeks. And if you looked in the academic discussion areas, you're probably looking at more like around 40 to 50 hits there. So the social area is significantly used, and I keep an eye on that, and it's interesting to see what kind of things go on there. And it's not just about kind of making dates for getting together at the pub. There are genuine discussions going on between them about kind of university-based issues.
Right, because it's interesting you use the word social, but you were drawing a distinction between extracurricular But acknowledging that that social conversation in the educational environment, the Blackboard environment, is very important to the learning experience.
Absolutely. I think it's a very important feature of the affordances that we give them in Blackboard. I would hate to think of just providing academic-only discussion fora for my students, because I know through experience they get so much out of that social area. It's a really important one for them.
Okay, so therefore, if we look at Facebook as providing an even richer opportunity for that sort of activity, do you think you're going to be using that tool with your students?
I'm certainly going to be introducing them to it. I think my preference, and I'm a little kind of old-fashioned and conservative, my preference would be to see something like the rich environment of Facebook within the more secure environment of Blackboard, so that I could introduce them into a safe environment where they could have all the features of a Facebook without perhaps the dangers of the networks exploding beyond the containable, controllable community, if indeed it is, but, you know.
Okay, well, I mean, there are such applications. Blackboard is headed in that direction itself. But there are applications like Elg.
I haven't encountered that one.
Right. So I think we will be seeing that in a slightly more formal context with some of the applications that will be coming our way. Yes, and so you're talking about the ring-fenced or slightly more secure context of friendship, social application. So it's almost like a tension or a contradiction there.
It is, yeah.
But it's about us having responsibility for our students and not throwing them into
the deep end, Absolutely. Yeah. It's like going into the shallow end of the pool and saying, you're safe here, so have an exploration, see what the facilities are, see what you would like to use and how you would like to use them. And then when you feel more confident and more secure, then you can step out into the broader global network. And like I say, that's perhaps just part of my personality, and maybe it's not the right one. And as you say, most of them are probably coming in already Facebook familiar anyway.
Yeah, I keep thinking, as we've seen with students who come to university with Hotmail addresses, they're just going to be coming with a few more things, like, you know, some of these Web 2.0 apps like Facebook and MySpace and whatever. So we might find that
it's a case of us getting on board with them rather than the other way around.
It's going to be really interesting, that's for sure.
I agree, yeah.
Thanks for that. I'm going to turn this off.
Okay.
Well, thanks again for listening to this podcast. If you have any ideas you'd like to see discussed on the Learning, Teaching and Assessment in Higher Education podcast, then do get in touch. You can check out some links to some of the applications that have been mentioned in this discussion, in particular Facebook, MySpace and Elg, on the show notes. And you can find that information at http://ltapodcast.blogspot.com, and you can email me at lta-podcast@shu.ac.uk. Thanks for listening.